An interview with former Packers wide receiver Charles Johnson is coming up, but first, we discuss the news that the Packers are considering a shakeup on their coaching staff that would include head coach Mike McCarthy relinquishing his play-calling duties. We'll break it all down on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich, we're talking some Packers football. We're talking about a coaching change. Not exactly, but more like a reshuffling, we'll say. That was the news over the weekend. First, some housekeeping duties, just very, very briefly. If your screen at Cheesehead TV looks a little bit weird, if you're listening to the live version of the show, I fixed it just before we came on air. You may have to refresh your screen. It may take a moment for the cache to kick in, but I have fixed it just in case you were wondering, and it looks a little wonky right now. But anyway, so... to kick off the show.
Packers news of the day.
On Sunday, the radio station in Green Bay, WDUZ, and Chris Hovel, former Green Bay Press Gazette editor, who hasn't covered the team from a reporting standpoint in many years, breaks a story that the Packers considering changes on the coaching staff that would include the relinquishing of play-calling duties by head coach Mike McCarthy. This is a report that has since been echoed by several other outlets. So there would appear to be some legs to it. I think this is probably going to come to fruition. Maybe all the exact details we don't exactly know yet. But this looks like it's something coming down the pipe. This has not been confirmed by the Green Bay Packers. It's just simply we're in the off season, folks. It's not like the regular season or we're in season where head coach Mike McCarthy holds press conferences 5 days a week. He's under no obligation to talk to the media right now. So they'll make an announcement when they're good and ready. So if nothing becomes official, I mean, that's why. We just have to wait. And one thing the Packers are probably waiting on is they're going to announce all these moves at the same time, not just what's happening on the offensive side of the football, but you'll remember now that's kind of become old news, but something that will become relevant again when they make a hire. You'll remember the Packers fired special teams coordinator Sean Slocum. There have been reports that Ron Zook is going to replace him, but we have nothing definitive yet. Offensive line assistant Steve Marshall left to take a position with the New York Jets. The Packers have to hire an assistant offensive line coach. That's going to happen as well. So, I mean, all these things are going to come, and you maybe the Packers are just kind of going to take care of all of them in one fell swoop with a press release or whatever. I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe they schedule a surprise news conference in which they introduce some of these new hires or things like that. But like I said, Mike McCarthy is under no obligation to speak to the media. His next time will probably be about a week and a half at the NFL Combine. So he will talk eventually. We just might have to wait a little while until some of these things get settled here. But reaction to the news that Mike McCarthy's relinquishing play-calling duties, I didn't think the Packers needed a scapegoat in in the wake of the NFC Championship loss to the Seattle Seahawks, I think the Packers' record speaks for itself. Of course, yeah, everybody wants to win Super Bowl championships. The harsh reality is that only one out of 32 teams can win it. And anybody out there that expects to win Super Bowl championships every year, well, welcome to reality. It's not going to happen. But the statistics I can cite are six consecutive playoff appearances for the Green Bay Packers under head coach Mike McCarthy, tied for the most in the NFL with Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Four consecutive NFC North division titles and a Super Bowl to Mike McCarthy's credit. I think he you know, his track record speaks for itself. All this being said, I'm not necessarily disappointed that this is happening. Mike McCarthy has frequently had one of the best offenses in the NFL ever since he's, you know, taken basically a perennial top 10 offense in the NFL ever since he became head coach in 2006, and frequently much higher than the top 10. You know, they were the number one scoring team in the NFL. And I realize once in a while, some scores come from special teams and defense, but still, this was an explosive offense and probably will continue to be as long as Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of the team. So, but I was not, you know, necessarily disappointed in this news. I think that by relinquishing play calling duties, Mike McCarthy can now focus on larger game management issues. And that is not necessarily a bad thing for the head coach of an NFL football team. I mean, you kind of look at the college game once in a while, and I think this is kind of the ultimate, you know, comparison, I guess. But, you know, they said some coaches are just figureheads, like Joe Paterno was at Penn State. And that's an extreme example, because I do think as he got maybe older, and, you know, in his advancing age, he was basically a figurehead that probably didn't, you know, have a whole lot to do with coaching the team. But I do think it is, when you are head coach, you can leave some of, like, at least the play calling duties during game day to assistants. You know, hey, they're coaches too, that they can handle it. They're big boys, you know. Whereas, you know, Mike McCarthy can focus on some of the macro issues of the team, on game days being game management in terms of, like, you know, calling timeouts, challenging replays by officials, talking to officials, all those kind of things. And, you know, just regular things he would normally do in terms of, you know, things he's got to handle on the sideline, talking to individual players when it warrants and when necessary. He can focus more on those things, because I do think, you know, there have certainly been times where Mike McCarthy has made perhaps the wrong choice in his play calling. You know, of course, the NFC Championship game loss to Seattle comes to the forefront of your mind. And there was the situation, I think the most egregious one, with about 5 minutes left in the game. Packers have a 2-score lead at the time, and they're in their own territory, and they give the ball to Eddie Lacy 3 times in a row up the gut, when all they need is basically a handful of first downs, and you know, they can ice the game away. You know, who knows? It, in retrospect, all it might have taken is one first down, and the game could be drastically different. But they decide to take the ball out of the hands of the best player on the field, quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and instead feed it to Lacy. You know, in what I think some people would say, playing not to lose. Of course, they're trying to whittle the clock, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. Obviously, you would have wanted, on 3 downs, you would have wanted to run the ball at least once or twice. But, you know, arguably when it came to 3rd down, it was 3rd and 14, and maybe it shouldn't have came to that point. But, you know, don't you want to put the ball in the hands of Aaron Rodgers and try to let him get a first, perhaps. Probably a little bit better idea than, you know, another Eddie Lacy run up the gut. Not only that, you know, there was the fourth and one in the first quarter, first drive of the game. John Kuhn ends up coming short of the goal line, albeit just barely. They actually call it a touchdown and then review it and find out he came up short. And then there was a second instance later in the first quarter in which the Packers also had to settle for a field goal after coming up short on fourth and one. And you know, I hesitate to criticize Mike McCarthy's play calling because no matter who the play caller is, there's going to be times where the armchair quarterbacks are going to be like, you know, it drives me nuts when watching, you know, people watching a game with people that criticize the play calling in retrospect of a bad play. Like, the play didn't work out and like, oh, I would have ran or I would have passed. And like, oh, well, thanks. You saw that it failed and now all of a sudden you're a genius because you're pointing out its obvious failure. You know, it just drives me crazy sometimes to do that in retrospect. I mean, you don't know the outcome of the play prior to it being called, but in retrospect, you're going to criticize it. So that's why I'm hesitant to criticize Mike McCarthy, because, you know, no matter who the offensive coordinator is or the play caller is, they're going to have failures. You're going to come up short on a third down. You're going to have to punt once in a while. But hopefully the Packers do it, you know, fewer than most. And they have under Mike McCarthy. Like I said, top 10 offense basically perennially under him. So the shakeup that's happening. Tom Clements being promoted to associate head coach, and he'll be taking over play calling duties. Basically, Mike McCarthy has called plays in Green Bay. I can't remember when it officially happened. I mean, because I remember when he was originally hired, and Jeff Jagodzinski was the offensive coordinator for, what was it, only 1 year? Something like that. And I believe Jags called plays. But at some point, and I don't know exactly when, and maybe if anybody on the live blog has the answer, they can feel free to post it in the comments on our live chat. But Mike McCarthy, you know, took over play calling duties from Joe Philbin. Joe Philbin was never really a play caller, and it stayed that way, even as the Packers hired, you know, Tom Clements. Basically, the job of the offensive coordinator in Green Bay for the past, you know, however many years, has been more or less big picture stuff, devising the game plan coming into the game, that figuring out exploiting weaknesses of the opposing defense, taking advantage of strengths that the Packers have over them. That was more the duty of the offensive coordinator as opposed to calling plays on game day. And it all goes, you know, hand in hand. Tom Clements would devise the game plan. Mike McCarthy would call the individual plays. Well, now Mike McCarthy can focus on game management. Tom Clements will call plays. And in addition to that, wide receivers coach Edgar Bennett purportedly going to be promoted to offensive coordinator. And basically he'll take over Tom Clements' former role of devising the game plan, more stuff like that. I would imagine, and again, nothing's been confirmed here, but, I see no reason why Edgar Bennett still wouldn't be wide receivers coach in this kind of co-offensive coordinator role. There's no reason he can't do that. And that would be an additional role for him. And that would be fine. I mean, if you think co-offensive coordinators is out of the ordinary, take a look at the college football game. Practically every major college out there has co-offensive and defensive coordinators nowadays. Not all, but lots and lots do. And it is kind of interesting how that all works. The one thing I do think is a little bit weird is now Tom Clements has been promoted to assistant head coach or associate head coach when the Packers already do have one with Winston Moss. So I you know, be curious to hear what Mike McCarthy's thoughts is on that. Should anything happen to him, you know, who would take over as head coach, Winston Moss or Tom Clements? I don't know the answer. That's the one thing I find a little bit weird, but in the grand scheme of things, I mean, assistant head coach, probably in a perfect world and ideally that they never are the head coach anyway. So, I mean, worrying about that, I think, is rather minor. And another reason to do this, pardon me, is that Edgar Bennett is being promoted here to help keep him in Green Bay. You can kind of read between the lines and see that. Edgar Bennett, been on the staff of Mike McCarthy ever since he came to Green Bay, starting out as running backs coach, diversifying his coaching portfolio by then moving on to wide receivers, doing a very good job with both positions. And, you know, he's you know, an up-and-comer in the coaching ranks. And, you know, whereas Edgar Bennett may at one point have looked to leave the Green Bay Packers if he saw no room for advancement, now he got the promotion. I'm assuming maybe a raise comes with it, which if so, good for him, which would prevent him from leaving, you know, if another offensive coordinator job came open. Well, he's already offensive coordinator. So now the only logical next step is for Edgar Bennett to become a head coach. And hopefully that comes eventually. But, you know, obviously anybody that hires him, the Green Bay Packers may be included down the road. You know, you want a few years of being an offensive coordinator first. So kudos to all of them for their promotions, whatever. It's keeping them in Green Bay, keeping them happy. Hopefully you worry that we're at the point where there's, you know, the so-called too many cooks in the kitchen. I don't think that'll be the case personally. I mean, maybe it's just me being an optimist. But I think Mike McCarthy has done a very good job from a macro level, of keeping, both players and coaches happy in Green Bay and just managing the team in general, not just on game days, but managing the team in general, juggling all the things that a head coach has to do in the NFL. I think Mike McCarthy does it as well as just about anyone in the NFL, maybe with the exception of Bill Belichick, on New England, Super Bowl champion. But the perhaps one other minor thing I suppose we can look here is maybe Alex Van Pelt is getting the short end of the stick. Here's a guy who is being considered as offensive coordinator just as recently as a few weeks ago with reportedly the St. Louis Rams, the Chicago Bears, the Jacksonville Jaguars, all wanting to interview Alex Van Pelt for their open offensive coordinator jobs, and the Packers preventing that. And here, he's not even being considered as offensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers. I mean, partially it's his own fault. I mean, he signed a contract and he probably knew that coming in. I mean, you notice that Steve Marshall didn't do the same thing. You know, he left himself open to get another job by signing only a one-year contract, whereas, you know, Alex Van Pelt here kind of stuck in Green Bay. But that doesn't mean the Packers don't appreciate what he does. I mean, he's just in line behind other guys. I mean, Edgar Bennett and Tom Clements have been around since the beginning of the Mike McCarthy era. Alex Van Pelt is not. And maybe his time will come. And who knows? I mean, maybe we're talking a year from now and Edgar Bennett and Tom Clements are being considered for other head coaching jobs in the NFL. I don't really know. And a lot has to play out before that happens, including a good season by the Packers. But that could be the case. So there's kind of your reaction to yesterday's news that the Packers considering a reshuffling of the deck on the coaching staff. And again, you know, a couple other things got to come down the pike, finding a special teams coordinator, finding an assistant offensive line coach. Things could be announced at any time. But I teased this in our last episode of Real Bird Central here, and finally getting to it, wanted to air today an interview with former Packers wide receiver Charles Johnson.
Expert interview.
Yep, we're getting to that in 1 second. What happened here is you've probably, if you come to CheeseheadTV.com regularly, we published a feature last week in which I talked to Charles Johnson, and he was very open and forthcoming about his time in Green Bay, and especially the misdiagnosis of his torn ACL that the Packers never discovered, and which was his downfall of leaving Green Bay, more or less. It led to the Packers placing him on the practice squad. He gets picked up by the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, had he never gotten injured, had the Packers just discovered the ACL and fixed it, I mean, things could have played out much differently in 2014 here. The Packers maybe don't go after three wide receivers in the NFL draft. It's all hypothetical now, but I was very excited when I had the opportunity to interview Charles Johnson, because I wanted to get the story on all this, because it went down so weirdly. You know, well, why couldn't the Packers find it? I mean, they find torn ACLs all the time. You know, I mean, what was so hard about finding this one? And I'm not really sure I ever got a straight answer on that from Charles Johnson, but I did ask him to explain it, and he talks about how he took multiple MRIs. I'll let Charles Johnson explain it. I never intended for this to be an audio interview that I would air on the podcast. Maybe my interviewing skills were, I never really planned it that way. But I thought he was such a good speaker, a loquacious speaker, just was very open. I think it gives a good behind the scenes look of what happens in the NFL. And here's our interview with Charles Johnson. Probably lasts about 10 minutes or so. And like I said, I think it gives you a good behind-the-scenes look of the NFL and the Packers in general. I start out by asking him in the beginning about being drafted by Green Bay. And you'll hear it kind of progresses from there. But here it is, our interview with Charles Johnson.
I mean, it was an amazing feeling to get drafted. I mean, I did play my last two seasons at Division II college, and I got drafted in the seventh round. I mean, it doesn't matter when you're drafted, it matters that you get where you're drafted. I mean, it's cool to get drafted and all, but I mean, it's better to what organization you go to. And I thought Green Bay drafting was a great organization for me to go to. And unfortunately, I was plagued with injuries my whole first year there, and it just didn't end up panning out. I ended up making the decision to leave, and my knee was messed up. I had ACL surgery, so it was just my whole first year was just injuries.
It was weird because now you were originally injured in, was it rookie minicamp? Was it? What happened there?
Well, I mean, originally in rookie minicamp, I pulled my hamstring. I told them before, I was like, my hamstring's gonna pull, like I can feel it. And sure enough, the last play of the last, like, it was like three plays left of the whole practice, and we was done with Ricky Pittycamp, and I ran that route, and it pulled, and it was unfortunate. And they ended up had to sit, and they ended up, like, resting me the whole OTAs, and when I came back for training camp, came back the first couple of days and was balling, doing well, running with the ones, and go back for a slant pattern thrown by Graham, and go back for it, and my knee gets caught underneath me, and I fall back on it, and there goes my knee, and It was crazy. They told me it was my MCL, so I rehabbed it, came back, and started practicing and playing in the last preseason game, and it still something wasn't right.
Yeah.
And, I had multiple MRIs, and then when I ended up deciding to go to Cleveland, they found that my ACL was actually torn.
So, I mean, how many practices did you take part in training camp there? Was it the first one you were back?
I practiced two practices.
Two practices.
Training camp. And then, I mean, once I came back for the last preseason game, I practiced that full week leading up to Kansas City.
Why couldn't they tell what it was?
I mean, they told me it's MCL and I had a bone bruise, and that's all they told me. And, I mean, I kept complaining. I had maybe three or four MRIs, and they never mentioned ACL. I mean, it probably just was missed. Hopefully, it was just honestly missed. And in Cleveland, when I went there and he felt my knee, the first throw, you know, how they got to do a physical, and he felt my knee. He told me, like, your ACL feels loose. I was like, it ain't loose. I just got done practicing on Friday, so it's nothing wrong unless the plane ride and something happened on the plane. I don't know. And so he got me another MRI, and they said, sure enough, it was torn. And so we went back and checked previous MRIs, and it shows that it was torn for 6 to 8 weeks. I just had been going through it.
Now, refresh my memory. They cut you at the end of training camp but brought you on the practice squad?
Correct. Yeah.
And how many weeks were you on the practice squad?
Like six.
Six. Yeah. And then Cleveland wanted to sign.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I mean, when did you find out then? I mean, did you just, they sign you, you do a MRI again, or?
When I went to Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, when they signed me, I had to do a physical. Yeah. During my physical, he's like, your ACL's loose. So they're like, we want to schedule your MRI. So I took the MRI, and I come in the next day, and I'm lacing up my cleats in my locker, going to run routes with Coach Norvin and them, and they're like, you can't run routes, your ACL's torn. I said, no, it ain't. I can run. I'm about to run. I try to convince them to just let me play it out because I had been playing for 6 to 8 weeks. Just let me play it out until it's bothering me and I can't cut. Because I was able to cut. And I had my own little method and how I compensate that, I guess, for the little bit of pain that I was in.
So you had surgery then?
Yes,
and
I had.
You went on injured reserve?
Yeah, I went on injury reserve. I went on non-football injury. It kind of screwed me because they put me on non-football injury and I wasn't injured there. And so I was basically there the whole year in Cleveland for free. I didn't make no money except for the 3 active weeks they had to pay me for signing me. But after that, I was there for free. And it kind of screwed me in the end. But, I mean, they held on to me and they wanted me there. And it was great.
Was it a 2-year contract they signed you to?
Yeah, they took over my rookie contract, so it was a 3-year.
Gotcha. But then you were released by the Browns.
Yeah, and then training camp in the Browns, I was limited. I couldn't participate in training camp because of ACL, and I got to practice maybe 25% of each practice. And I talked to the offensive coordinator. They all loved me. They said, yeah, you're our number 2 guy. Whoop-de-whoop. So I... final cuts come out, I'm on the roster. I'm like, okay, I'm good. The next day, they call me up, and the GM tells me that they're going to release me and all this. And, I mean, I know on the offensive side, offensive coordinator, wide receiver coach, they was real upset with that when they released me. And they end up signing me to practice squad there. And, it was just crazy. Once I did decide to leave and go to Minnesota, offensive coordinator expressed, like, this wasn't my decision. Like, we wanted you here. I told you exactly what we wanted. And then GM's like, he told me basically it was his fault. He was trying to get talent in there, and the guy, he wanted to bring more people in, and he knew that I was still recovering from an injury, that he could practice squad me and bring another guy in and then for active and then put him on practice squad and bring me back up. But and then I ended up just leaving and heading back with North Turner now.
Was it the same situation with you're on the practice squad at the Browns and then you sign with the Vikings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like that. And I mean, I signed with the Vikings, then the Browns tried to activate me, obviously, and make me on their active roster. But, I mean, I thought the best decision was for me to go with North Turner because of the type of offense they run and it fits me.
Have you been pretty happy with the way things turned out? I mean, it was a long journey,
man.
But...
Yeah, it's been a long journey, but I mean, it's really nothing I couldn't handle. I mean, my life getting to where I'm at today has been long, and it's always been some ups and downs, some twists and turns, and some crazy things happening. I mean, that's just how it's continued so far in the NFL. And I mean, I'm now at a place in Minneapolis that really likes me, and I think it's gonna be good for me. And I finally got an opportunity, man. That's all it really is. You don't know who a person is. You don't know what a player is until he gets opportunity. And I like to say, when hard work meets opportunity, you create your own success. And I've always worked hard. I just haven't had the opportunity because of injuries this whole first year. So now I finally get the opportunity this past season, and I now get to create my own success. And that's all it is. If you get opportunity at anything, you create your own success. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be the first pick of the draft or the last pick of the draft. If you don't get the opportunity to showcase what you can do, it doesn't matter.
And now you scored a touchdown against the team that drafted you this year. I mean, tell me about that play.
Yeah, I also got my first catch, my first start, and my first touchdown versus this team that drafted me. Just throw that out there.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was crazy, man. I mean, actually, my first game actually getting to play, I got to play against Green Bay, and I got a catch. My first ball thrown to me was supposed to be a touchdown, but they said I didn't get both feet. And so I was like, I was very upset about that because I was like, man, I got to get a touchdown, my first catch in the NFL and my versus the team. So I ended up getting a 7-yard catch versus the Packers on my first catch that same game, the first time we played them. And it was only 7 yards, but it meant so much more to me. Not only because it was against the Packers, but because I got a catch in the NFL. People take for granted how hard it is to get one catch in the NFL and how talented this league is. And all the trials and tribulations I've been through to get a catch and just be able to say, I did this, if that's my last catch, I got a catch in the NFL. That's just a great thing for me. And, I mean, it was just something I really was blessed to have. And then we played them again, and I got the start and got my first catch touchdown. I can't explain. I was super stoked about that. And, I mean, it was exciting, man. Everybody showed me love on Green Bay Packers, man. Aaron Rodgers, all the DBs, all the receivers, they really, like, showed me love. Like, man, we like that you coming on. We like that you fought through all your trials and tribulations, your injuries. And, I mean, I appreciate those guys so much. And, like, it was good. I mean, it was an exciting moment for me.
The touchdown, it was I went and watched that before I came down to interview you. And it's like what happened on the play? Because it's like Tremont Williams guarding you, and it seems like he just kind of let you went.
I mean, the route that I had on, it was a route determined on coverage. If he was going to press me, I'm going deep, and I know the ball's coming to me no matter what if he's pressing. If he's off, there's a chance that it could come to me, depending on coverage. So when he came up and pressed me, I was like, all right, that's my time to win. So, I mean, Tremont ended up seeing that I like to grab at the line and throw him. So I just grabbed his shoulder and tried to throw him by. And once I did that, I just used my speed to get past, and it was really my spot. Teddy threw a great ball and able to get open.
Is that an indication where you're the up-and-coming player and Tremont is on his way, older player, or?
I don't know. I mean, Tremont is one of the best corners I've gone against. His feet is so fast. I mean, and playing defensive back, people don't realize how hard it is. If you win, if you win like half of your battles or less than half, you're doing great. Because you don't know what route they're running. You don't know when they're breaking. You don't know where the ball is. That's the hardest position on the field is to play defensive back. And Tremont, he not only has strength and tackling ability, he has some of the quickest feet I've seen. The way he can transition from breaks is just tremendous. And, I mean, I'm a guy who's physical, so once he pressed me, and like I knew what I was going to do, and I just ended up beating him on that play. But I don't think he's descending. I do think I'm on the rise a little bit. I mean, I'm not a guy who wants to hype me up or anything, but I'm going to work hard to get to where I want to be, and hopefully I can play in this league for a long time. But Tremont been doing it for a long time, and you can't take nothing away from that. And people make bad plays, people make good plays, and people sometimes want to get on you more when you make a bad play than when you make that great play. So, I mean, I think he's still got some years in him to play in this league, and I think he still can be great.
Well,
there it is, our interview with Charles Johnson, former Packers wide receiver, now with the Minnesota Vikings. You could hear me kind of press him on Tremont Williams at the end, if you remember, when Charles Johnson scored his first touchdown. It was again, you know, Tremont Williams was in coverage, and, you know, I kind of had a little bit of an ulterior motive there in that I was, you know, I just knowing Tremont Williams is going to be a free agent, I kind of wanted to pick his brain a little bit, you know, kind of wondering, does Tremont Williams still have it in him? You know, at over 30 years old, becoming a free agent, you know, do the Packers still want to commit to him? I'm, you know, that is the biggest question mark in my mind entering the off season here, is what happens at the cornerback position, and one I don't really have an answer to. Now, if you ask me what the Packers are going to do in free agency, I'll tell you, I think they're going to re-sign Randall Cobb. I think they're going to re-sign Brian Bulaga, both of those guys. Cornerbacks, I have no clue what they're going to do between Tremont Williams, Devon House, and Jarrett Bush all becoming free agents. I don't know who they're going to let go, who they're going to bring back. That one I don't have a feeling for. So anybody that's worried, and I see this all the time, is Randall Cobb going to, are they going to let Randall Cobb get away? I'm telling you, don't even worry about that. It's not worth worrying about. I don't think Randall Cobb's going to be back. It's going to happen. I would be majorly surprised if he left. So I think Randall Cobb's coming back, and but the cornerbacks, not sure. We'll find house. We'll find out, not find house. Maybe we will find Devon House though, and he'll be back in Green Bay. He could be a hot commodity though. Be interesting. So that's our interview with Charles Johnson. Sorry for the background noise. That interview actually took place while I was in Arizona at the Super Bowl. I'm sure if you know you follow the NFL, you've heard of Radio Row before. That Charles Johnson was kind of doing the old Radio Row circuit, talking to radio stations, stuff like that. Thing a lot of NFL players do. They come to the site of the Super Bowl and do that. And, I wasn't on the radio at the time, but I was just, you know, in the area and I had the opportunity to talk to Charles Johnson. So, just talked to him for about 10 minutes or so. And, you could hear the radio announcers in the background and stuff like that. So, it was cool. Like I said, I intended all along, I was going to interview him for an article I was going to write, but it ended up being such a quality interview. I thought it was good to share here on the show. Hope you enjoyed that. And like I said, I think it does give you a behind the scenes look of the NFL and what happens. As far as
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers here on Monday, the only thing I have that I could find that is Packers related, put in today's Packers calendar at Cheesehead TV. Former special teams coordinator John Bonamago being introduced as the new Central Michigan University head coach on Monday. Actually hired on Sunday, he'll be introduced to the public in a press conference at 2:30 p.m. local time. You'll remember John Bonamago was the special teams coordinator under former Packers head coach Mike Sherman. Kind of left when Sherman ended up getting fired. Bonamago had since gone on to become the special teams coordinator of the division rival Detroit Lions. So in a way, this move is now forcing the Lions to look for a new special teams coordinator as well. Coincidentally, at the same time, the Packers are looking for a new special teams coordinator. Reportedly, the Packers are going to hire Ron Zook, although nothing's official yet, so can't really say that with 100% certainty. That's what's happening on a Monday. John Bonamago, new head coach of Division I Central Michigan University, going to get used to some action in college football. That'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you everybody so much for joining us. We'll see you later. Thanks to Charles Johnson for talking to us. And we'll talk to you again on Wednesday, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time here at Cheesehead TV. On behalf of everyone, we'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Mental Floss by Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.